Are you just excited as all heck to cheer for your former franchise?
Well, let's just say I haven't gone online and ordered a Harden jersey yet, you know, yeah. And I don't see myself ordering a Harden jersey based on what happened over the last month or two. You know, basically a guy that sabotaged things to kind of force his way out of Houston, and he got his wish, and he's in a Brooklyn Nets uniform.
Dude, if Boogie Cousins is coming out and saying that you're a bad teammate, it's like, oh boy, this is a whole new level of bad teammatery. I don't know. It wasn't a very good look for James Harden. Yeah, you're out of shape. You didn't care. You obviously were divisive in the locker room. If basically everyone was willing to come out and throw stones at you. It was bad. And they get a package that a month ago, we all said was never going to happen because it's just not nearly enough for Houston. What have you heard about what their other alternatives were? And ultimately, do you think that this decision, despite them being forced to take it, was the right one?
Yeah, I think they basically had a point of no return, especially, and I think this deal, you know, the Brooklyn deal, and, you know, certainly parameters of a deal with Philadelphia were being discussed before he, you know, threw his teammates under the bus and told that locker room that they were not good enough to compete here. And I think they, you know, they basically set an unofficial deadline, which was yesterday at a certain time. And both, you know, either the Philadelphia deal, which would have included Ben Simmons, or the Brooklyn deal that included, you know, all these unprotected and pick swaps and then included Victor Oladipo here. They basically kind of lined each other up and felt what was the best from a flexibility standpoint, what can help us now. And they chose that Nets deal. Two schools of thoughts from this. I would have probably been more inclined to do the Philadelphia deal with Ben Simmons. I think Ben would have been the best player involved in the deal, and he's under contract for the next 5 years. I mean, that is rare when you have a top 15 player to do so. The second thing was I would have been more inclined to keep, you know, I know you got Christian Wood there and you'd have to figure it out, but I would have more inclined to keep Caris LeVert instead of Victor Oladipo, unless you're going to trade Oladipo down the road, because he will probably cost you more than the $16, $17 million of what LeVert will earn next year with Oladipo being a free agent. So I think if you're picking the deal apart, that's kind of my perspective, on that.
Yeah, and I definitely agree with you about I like LeVert and the security and the fact that he is under contract far more than I like Oladipo, who might be a better player overall. But, yeah, I think it's a pretty clearly diminished asset, and he is an unrestricted free agent. And, okay, so this is the place they are. I liked just the work that the Pacers and the Cavs did in general, getting to pick the carcass of this deal and basically get really good pieces for essentially nothing. But yeah, the Houston thing, if I'm a Houston fan, this is what scares me a little bit, is you flip LeVert, you get Oladipo. It might be you win a few more games this season, but this has to be done because you think that they're not re-signing Oladipo, right? Like that this is because they look at it and say, well, we can get him off the books. It's why we wanted the Dante Exum expiring contract. It's why we want Victor Oladipo. Do you think that they will look to re-sign him, or do you think it's going to take until the end of the season? How do you see it playing out with Oladipo in Houston?
I think it's going to be interesting if when Victor Oladipo reports. You know, I mean, he's got 48 hours to report. I think he's going to take the full 48 hours to get there. And does he want to be part of that going forward? I mean, more for next year and year, you know, and of course money talks. And yeah, I think they looked at it more of a flexibility standpoint, because they could have taken Torian Prince and Jared Allen and Caris LeVert, and they would have had money on their books for next year, and you get Exum and Oladipo, and you know, that's, you know, $30 million that will come off. And my only concern is that, okay, well, who are you going to go out and sign with that? Right, like, this is not a great free agent class of players here, and you know, they looked at it that the picks had priority, when especially when With Durant and Irving and Harden, potentially could be free agents 2023, getting up there a little bit in age. They felt that the priority in the pick outweighed a Ben Simmons and or keeping, players that were under contract.
So you mentioned it. It felt like this was the Ben Simmons return was the most significant asset they could get in return for a James Harden trade, but they took the multitude of picks and the guy on the expiring contract. How much of this and of not taking the Sixers offer do you think had to do with the Daryl Morey exit from Houston and the personal relationship maybe with him and the owner?
Oh, I think that had something to play with it. I have to be a part of it. I think if you're a Houston, you're probably looking to squeeze the most possibly out of Philadelphia. And they were, the Sixers were restricted because they had made the Al Horford trade to Oklahoma City. They had traded a future pick, 2025. So they didn't have the full amount to offer in a trade. Basically, 2021 and 23 were the only two unprotected that they could do, and if you're Houston, you wanted those picks probably in later years. So, if you were Houston, and certainly Ben Simmons, we know that was on the table. You're looking at with Tyrese Maxey, who's played well in the minutes with that roster decimated. You're looking to take as much as possible, and then if you're Philadelphia, it's like, okay, what do we where do we draw the line in the sand here? Right, like we are a good team already. I think the 10-game sample has proved it before before COVID hit here. I think if it was another general manager or head of basketball operations that was in Philadelphia, you probably are not squeezing as hard. But with Daryl there, I think you were trying to take as much as you can, and Philadelphia wasn't willing to do so.
Yeah, and I think that makes sense. It's tough to hear. Weirdly enough, I actually think it's the hardest on Sixers fans, because I would just so much rather have James Harden than Ben Simmons, especially on this team if you're trying to win a title. I like Simmons. I think the defense is good. I think he's a tad overrated. I would be questioning how he fits with John Wall if you're going to continue down that path, if it is even going to work that way. But I'm okay with the Houston side of things, because you get to play it off as, well, first of all, our hand was forced, and now we have a ton of flexibility. And if everyone's going to be ranting and raving about Sam Presti accumulating draft picks, and we're starting to do the same thing, well then, yeah, where's our love, especially considering we might be able to, attract free agents here, that we might be able to actually get people to sign on the dotted line that aren't Paul George for one season at a Nas concert. But The Brooklyn side of things is obviously the most fascinating, because they've got the team, they've got the players, now they don't have the picks. And yeah, you were part of a front office that made that trade or multiple trades where you guys were just like, hey, get rid of draft picks, accumulate, bring in good players, bring in talent. I'm curious how you think that this shifts pressure on a front office and how that changes the tenor around a building and how people operate, knowing that, yeah, your draft future is gone for the next 5-6 years.
Well, I think it's a little bit different because, knowing that organization, pretty well, there's complete ownership buy-in as far as what they just did. I mean, we made the deal in 2013 when we traded away all those picks for Pierce and Garnett. And then a year later, we're like, well, we're not going to spend money and we're not going to bring back Paul Pierce. Like, you changed the goalposts, and we were just left with Deron Williams and Joe Johnson and Garnett, an older Garnett here. And that, there's no safety net. So I think in this case, you've got these guys under contract. I know, as I said, they have player options in 2022. You got three players under contract for the next, 2 or 3 years here. Yes, you do not have draft picks. Are you win now? Yeah, I mean, you basically put all your cards on the table here. I looked at this deal more about protecting Kevin Garnett when he becomes a free agent, and not to give him any inclination that he should go elsewhere. And I know we're only in year two of Garnett, but the way he's played, I mean, he is playing at an MVP level. The Kyrie situation throws everything kind of in haywire that, if we're going to trust Kyrie, the Nets were probably going to get burned at the end of the day, and Durant was probably going to be in a different uniform come 2022. But now you get Harden, certainly a relationship already. Is it a big three? I don't know. We'll see what happens with Kyrie, but at least you have two MVP level players on your roster, and now you just kind of you build around there. But I said it yesterday. You know, when you do these type of deals, you have a sense of confidence, and you also have a sense of arrogance that you always think you are going to put a great team on the floor, right? Like 2025, like you always say, like, who, you know, like 2025, 2026, like there might be somebody else here to clean up the mess down the road here. And I think Sean Marks, their head of basketball operations, has proven it. You know, I mean, he's gone out and gotten Dinwiddie and Joe Harris, and he's been able to make trades and find these under the radar type guys. It just puts a little more pressure now as far as kind of building that back end infrastructure.
Yeah, you mentioned it though. It's easier to be way more bullish on this Nets team if you really knew what the heck was going to happen with Kyrie. Does this give you any indication that Sean Marks at least is confident that he's coming back at some point, or do you think they're still scratching their head?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, when that date is going to be, I think even if Kyrie said today or tomorrow, I'm coming back, I don't know what coming back means. Like, because we'll see what it's in the league's hands as far as him have to probably go through this health and safety protocol. Maybe there is a quarantine process where you're going to lose him for maybe another week here. So I think eventually he will be back. I don't think this was a trade that was done to say like, hey, Kyrie, like, we just got James Harden. We're a good team now. I mean, they were a good team. They were a good team when he was on that roster, and they had the depth to show it. It just, you know, now you've depleted that here. So I think he'll be back. You know, is it tomorrow or, you know, Saturday? But as far as from a playing standpoint, I don't know what type of shape he's in. I don't know if he's going to have to go through his health and safety protocol. Probably will be. So the likelihood is that you probably do not see him for, you know, at a minimum another week here.
Yeah, and you don't know even when you get him back, like you said it, if you can trust Kyrie, when the next thing that pops up will come. And what that
Yeah, that's the big
like.
Thing, the trusting. Like what's to say that we get to May and June and the playoffs are coming and he kind of goes off the reservation, right? Like then Durant is left with, you know, a nice team with LeVert and Allen and those guys. Dinwiddie's out, but probably not a team that can get to an Eastern Conference Finals or an NBA Finals.
Well, that brings me to the thing about Kyrie, which is, so there was some buzz yesterday as this was happening, which was basically, and it wasn't everywhere, and some of the sources were a little sketchy, but essentially that Kyrie is already really pissed with the organization, that he doesn't feel involved in the way that he should be. And like he hinted at that personally in the first place when he talked about Steve Nash, where he said, I don't feel like we have a coach. But there's reports that he actually didn't sign off on Nash and that he didn't really want Steve Nash. And that he doesn't like the way things are going with the organization. And now, yeah, you put him in a spot where he is with KD and he is with James Harden. And maybe now he has to question his place a little bit more within the organization or within the team or within the way that Nash sees him, the offense, all of this stuff. Have you heard anything similar to that, that the Kyrie stuff is also related to basketball?
I haven't, but I don't believe Kyrie Irving has built enough equity within that organization where he is a decision maker. Certainly there's times when if you're Sean Marks, as far as from a coaching standpoint or from a roster standpoint, that, you know, you do maybe consult, but, you know, he is not the end all be all, you know, final say or have a strong voice in there. You know, he's been with that team for a little over a year, and he was out for most of last year with an injury, and now he's taken a week plus personal leave, sabbatical here. So I haven't heard that, but my response would be that, and I said it on SportsCenter this morning, like, you know, the train's leaving, man. I mean, either you're in or you're out. I mean, we've got our two MVPs with Harden and Durant, and we're going to proceed as we can. If you want to be part of it, great. If not, you know, you can make a decision if you want to retire or if you want to, you know, maybe we'll look elsewhere to move you here. But I don't think the Nets' hands are tied anymore, where, as I said earlier, that they're just waiting for Kyrie.